Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Hour number two on FST. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Whenever you however you've decided to spend your Saturday with us, we appreciate it. It's Father's Day weekend. Happy Father's Day to everybody out there. I'm looking forward to celebrating with the fam tomorrow. You'll hear some content tomorrow. Kevin and I won't be on tomorrow, but you'll hear some content on there. Maybe replays of this show or some other highlight shows from throughout the week, but always good content on there. For you to listen to. So a variety of topics and everything else. Today, it's after us. It's Bogman and the Welsh for In This League, 12 to 3, and then 3 to 6, Weekend Fantasy Update. That's Joe Galina and George Kurtz. So we do have the World Cup is upon us. And I'll give you my background as a soccer fan. I really love the sport. I do. I did not grow up liking it at all. I was used to be irritated as a kid that it sort of took in youth sports, took some shine away from baseball as people gravitated towards soccer in some instances. But I'd say I went over to England on a trip of 20 years ago, Kevin. You were just a tyke. You were probably a toddler at this time. And I was over there and I was in London on a Sunday. I had taken a European trip. I'd gone to Italy and France, and it was like a backpacking type of trip. And I was in England by myself on a Sunday. And the matches were going, and it was pubs and people going crazy. And I ducked into a pub, and I was like, this is awesome. This is just like we have football at home. And everybody was into it, and it gave me, and then I also had a cousin that lived over there, and he talked to me about how rabid fans they are, and it gave me the start of like, yeah, maybe this would be kind of fun to watch. Now, back in the day, you didn't really get much. Like, the World Cup would come on every 4 years, and like, they didn't cover it like they do now. So you couldn't really see that many matches. And then at one point, Man U was on the Yes Network, and so you had that little break. But really what it used to be is I lived in Manhattan, and I would go out in the mornings with one good friend of mine named Rick, and we would go and watch these matches. We'd get up at 7:45 in the morning on a Sunday and like take in a beer and watch the games. It was fun. But that's how it started. And I saw it grow in Manhattan over the years, in the 9 years or so that I lived there. And it started growing, and it became more widely available in soccer bars. And it used to be pay-per-view. And then it started to, you know, NBC Sports signed a contract with it. So all of these things, I watched all that kind of grow. And where I would trace my official fandom back to is probably the 2002 World Cup, which was over in South Korea. And I was getting up at times super early in the morning to watch these matches. And I think that's what started my fandom. English Premier League was at the time the most widely available. So I just kind of picked a team there in Chelsea, which I understand many people hate. At times it's irritating to admit that you're a Chelsea fan because everybody hates that team that's not a fan of it. But that's how my fandom traces back to. And I watched English Premier League as a rabid fan for years. Now, as I've had a family and I've done these shows, obviously, on Saturday and Sunday mornings, it has really hurt my ability to follow it. But I still like it, and I follow it probably a little bit more from a distance. So that's my background as a soccer fan. Hello.
Moved if LeBron joined. So just take that in. I don't think it's very surprising. Literally, I swear, just came across. We just said that in the last segment. It makes sense for a number of reasons. Wanting ready, proven players, not wanting the whole LeVar Lonzo mess, all of that stuff. We didn't even talk about a rap battle. In terms of soccer fandom and stuff like this, I'm not even ashamed to admit it. It all kind of started with FIFA for me. It's funny. When I was younger, I just didn't like soccer. I honestly think a lot of it came from the fact that the kids who played soccer in my elementary school tried to call it football, and it infuriated me and brought me to a point where I was like, I hate soccer, which I regret so much now because I love the game. I actually wish I did play it when I was younger. I absolutely love the World Cup. Yesterday was so exciting. Honestly, there was a point during the Portugal-Spain match. I think it was shortly after Nacho had scored his third goal. And I just out loud said, I'm having such a good time watching. Which is such a corny thing to say, but that's just how I felt at the time. Like, it was an absolute blast. And this World Cup has been phenomenal. And we are in day three. We had a favorite in Spain fire their head coach before we even played any games.
Crazy. That was a crazy storyline to kick the whole thing off. As my buddy texted me when it happened, he said, this seems like suboptimal timing for the replacing the head coach. And I was like, you're right. But, you know, player coach and in Iniesta and an extremely experienced team. So I do get into it. I will watch as much as I can. It sort of helps me in some ways that it's kind of during the work day that a lot of these matches take place, if that makes sense, because on weekends after I get off the show, I got to spend some time with the family and do that kind of stuff. So I can't just park in front of a television or go to a pub like I probably would have 15 years ago and watched a bunch of matches. So it's not like that now. But you're right. Like, I'm bummed that I missed the match yesterday. I saw the highlights because I was on the golf course at the U.S. Open. But my friends were texting me saying this match is unbelievable. And hat trick for Cristiano Ronaldo, 3-3 tie, Portugal-Spain, which is a pretty cool matchup for a group stage. You would expect that to be later, but they happen to be in the same group this time. Russia obviously just went crazy to open up the festivities against Saudi Arabia on Thursday, and then we got some good matches today. France beats Australia this morning. From all accounts, as I was watching the second half, France played a pretty lackluster performance out of France. It was considered to be a pretty good team, but they escaped with the win against Australia. Paul Pogba, who had an extremely disappointing campaign for Manchester United this past season, there's a lot of pressure on him to deliver in this World Cup, and he actually delivered the game-winning goal here. It was off of a deflection, and it was a little bit of a fluky goal, but to the victors go the spoils. He gets the win there, and France is, you know, thought to be one of the favorites for the cup. So big win for them. And then Argentina and Iceland are locked up right now. They're starting the second half. Do you know who scored those goals?
I know Aguero scored the first goal. I wanted to say, though, with the France game, actually, we had a historic goal in that game. Griezmann's first goal, or the first goal of the game scored by Antoine Griezmann off the penalty, was the very first time that the VAR, the video assistant referees, overturned what was a no call on the pitch and said that needs to be a penalty. And that is monumental. This is the very first World Cup that which they are using VAR. You know, for guys like us who enjoy soccer, but kind of come from the American sports background, I feel like the addition, and I don't want to speak on your behalf, so if you disagree, obviously go for it. But I feel like the addition of replay, I mean, it's something that we are used to, kind of to the point when I hear a lot of the backlash. Why? Like, why do people want a situation where Maradona can win a World Cup by scoring a goal with his hand? I have no idea the desire. I understand that it can delay things. Obviously, we've seen that The NBA Finals, one of the big storylines was the refs. The NFL still can't figure out what a catch is. So I understand that replay at times can make things difficult, but it does seem like a tool that would be foolish to ignore. And that's kind of one of the big storylines, obviously.
Even in the last World Cup, by the way, there were goals that were not called goals, and there was no replay in place. The fact that they didn't have goal line technology, for lack of a better phrase, but it's called goal line in soccer too. Their goal line technology was absurd. Now they have it, and they confirmed Pogba's goal, which hit the top of the crossbar and dropped down over the line. What was the nature of the foul on the Aguero goal?
I believe it was it was in the box. He had passed the guy, and he kind of tried to slide in, and he clipped him on the legs, and I mean, he went down. And
so there you go. So yeah. So look, in the interest of not getting into a huge referee and video replay discussion, which could go on for hours, I understand what you're saying, and I'm a proponent of instant replay, even with its warts. But so I'll say that. What's funny about the NBA stuff, and I was listening to a podcast, Bill Simmons, earlier this week, and they were talking about how it's funny that the NBA officials, while people complain about it, it doesn't draw the ire of fans like it does in the NFL. Can you imagine what would have happened if the call on the LeBron KD thing in game one happened in the Super Bowl? We'd never stop talking about it. Granted, NBA fans will remember that call, but ultimately it resulted in a 4-game sweep. Now, it could have been a catalyst for that to happen, but if that a play like that was overturned in the Super Bowl, people would lose their minds, especially if it's a judgment call type of play. It would probably that Super Bowl might only be remembered for a call like that. So that is kind of an interesting thing. But yeah, with you. I'm glad video replay is instituted now.
That's what Chris Collinsworth was trying to do with the Zach Ertz touchdown. What a buffoon moment. We don't have to get into the whole Collinsworth.
But I actually can't blame Collinsworth anymore because he's confused, just like the fans are and the refs are. We're all confused, and now they say, like, do you have any confidence that with the rule, and we can get into this at a different day, I just ask you a yes-no question. Do you have any confidence that the adjustments that they made this offseason are going to solve the problem in 2018?
No.
Right. So what does it matter? Like, great, I'm glad you guys met about it again. We'll see if it works. See you in February if it doesn't screw up the whole season. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. But so World Cup. Let's talk about odds of the teams. Oh, yeah. The World Cup odds for the tournament. And we can get into game-by-game predictions and all that kind of stuff. But the odds for the tournament, this is from the New York Times. It's based on the consensus of several legal betting sites, including Ladbrokes, William Hill, and Betfair. Brazil is the favorite at 4-1. The bringing up the rear in some of these, I might as well just for fun, bringing up the rear is Tunisia there at 750-1, along with Saudi Arabia, Panama, also at 750-1. Unfortunately for Saudi Arabia, they had the opening match against Russia. It was 3-0 after full time, and then they led up two additional extra time goals, and they probably could have driven straight to the airport because they're down. They've got a loss. At -5, that's going to be hard to come back from.
Yeah, I mean, if Saudi Arabia was going to have any chance of doing anything in this group, they probably needed to steal a win in that game. Russia came in winless in their last 7, actually, heading into that match. So to lose 5-0, it kind of lets you know what the tournament's going to look like for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and by the way, I was taking odds from betonline.ag. When I go back to the previous list, they're at 5,000-1. So similar to the Leicester City 5,000-1 from the Premier League a couple of years back. According to some sites, they're 5,000-1. And based on the first match, I think they did a nice job of setting those odds. It's not going to happen. So And those odds are probably triple, maybe 10 times that now. So Brazil 4-1, Germany 5-1, Spain 6-1, France 6-1. That's your cluster of top teams, which, you know, I think sometimes we're on a minute to minute, especially in the group stage of the World Cup, we're on a minute to minute assessment of these teams. And France played a little bit of a lazy game this morning, but they won. That's a good thing, right? They didn't play their best, but they get the win over Australia. Obviously, you want to see them play better in the next match in particular, but France, one of those teams that can compete. Most of the experts I saw are going with Brazil. They don't feel like Germany has the best squad this time around, but most of the experts I saw have Brazil coming out ahead. Belgium has been a little bit of a dark horse for some teams. Argentina, as good as they are, I still sometimes find it to be a bit of a one-man show, and then him needing to carry the whole team. Remember, he almost retired a few years ago after the last World Cup. Half the team did if they didn't get rid of the coach.
It wasn't even the World Cup. It was Copa America. Oh, it was literally right. It was that's last right. Summer. He retired.
Yeah.
Like that's yeah. So one of the things that I feel like is honestly it is so important. This is quite possibly the very last World Cup for both Messi and Ronaldo. Now,
yes.
You don't have to get into whether you feel like one of them is the greatest of all time, whether you think one of them is one and one of them are two. It does not matter. They are undeniably the two best players in the world. It's been that way for a decade. And neither one of them have won a World Cup. Now, to their own fault, and listen, they've had their moments. 100% they've had their moments. Ronaldo scored 3 goals. Against Spain. He had 3 total goals in his 3 prior World Cups. Messi got to a final to connect. So that to me is one of the biggest storylines in this whole thing is you have 2 of the absolute all-time greats trying to maybe get that final mark that legacy-wise it puts them past everybody else.
Yeah, agreed. So we'll come back. We'll wrap this up, this discussion, and talk some NFL. Kevin and I come back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. A lot of drama right now at the World Cup. And Leo Messi just took a penalty kick and it was saved. That is incredible.
You're a little
that
ahead of
is
me.
Incredible.
You son of a...
Sorry. Sorry to blow that for you. But Leo Messi, literally, I was trying to wait for it to come out of the break and he was lined up and it was saved. Great save.
Oh.
Kick was on the money, but the guy guessed right. The goalie guessed right on Iceland, and it remains 1-1. I don't know if the penalty was as clear as it should have been, but it looked like a takedown, and now is that a handball in the box? Wow. So drama here in the second half of the Argentina-Iceland match. I think Leo Messi's got to be sick right now because he's got to put that away. You were literally making that point before the break. Like, these guys have to, for their legacies, they're fighting for they're already going to be immortalized hero soccer players, mm-hmm. but they don't have the big trophy on their shelf, right? Oh. Ronaldo has a big one. He's got Euro 2016. Right. That one's going to live forever. And he's a hero in that country. Messi is a hero in Argentina, but Maradona is a notch above him. Some people will say Messi's a better player, but Maradona is immortalized because of the World Cup in 82, 86.
Well, that's kind of one of the big things with Messi, honestly, is he's never even won Copa America. Like, he has no titles with Argentina. And Copa America, I mean, it's just not as difficult as Euro is. Now, anybody who is staunchly on the side of Messi in this argument would say Ronaldo wasn't even on the pitch when they scored the deciding goal in the game against France in the final. Well, sure, but again, it's the Euros. He got them there. And I still feel, and I don't know, I just can't get the image of him kind of seemingly coaching Eder as he came on to the pitch, who scored that winning goal against France. That to me, it all kind of resonates and it all stands out. And one of the problem is for Messi is the penalties that he has missed in the Copa Americas. Those are kind of, not to say that they're not the lasting image of Messi's career, not by any stretch of the imagination, but internationally, it has been viewed as a massive failure. And it's crazy, right? Because it's almost LeBron-esque in a way, right? Where LeBron's now lost three of the last four finals, yet he's, in my eyes, been the best player in all four of the finals. Messi won MVP of last year's World Cup, but the kind of the standout result is he didn't win the World Cup. So it is incredibly big for him. I mean, and this is one of the, I enjoy player to player rivalries. And I love that after Ronaldo scored three, everybody said, oh, well, surely Messi is now going to put three on Iceland, or Messi better put three on Iceland. Like I thoroughly enjoy that stuff. I think it is exciting. I think it adds all to it. And again, I cannot stress that enough. The fact that this very well could be the last World Cup. Certainly it's going to be the last World Cup where these two enter as the two best players in the world. It is cannot miss stuff every second that they are on the pitch.
Yeah. To your point, I do see a little bit of LeBron stuff there insofar as it's the age of social media, and this stuff didn't happen to Michael Jordan, just to make a quick comparison there. But I've always hated this. Every time this really happened, I really started to notice it, I guess, when he was with the Heat. Like, every time LeBron was taking the ball down the court in the finals, you know, the decision ramped up a lot of this, but every time he would take the ball down the court, it was like a referendum on how good LeBron is. Like, did you see he had three turnovers? I'm like, yeah. He scored 16 points in the quarter. Like, I know he turned the ball over a couple of times, but, like, he's trying to facilitate for the entire team, and he's dominating. So you just can't pick up your negative two or three turnover stat in the one quarter and forget the fact that he scored 16 points. I mean, it's dominating. So I see a lot of that, and that's going to happen with these guys. That's the level that they're at.
I have
LeBron is the only guy in America that's as famous athletically as these guys. Tiger Woods, I guess you could say, has been that famous, but relevant and famous athletically, LeBron is the only guy in America that can compare to Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. So I do love it. I am into it. I don't want to pick Brazil because I don't want to jump on that bandwagon. I picked Germany correctly 4 years ago. I want a pool doing that, but I just don't know. I mean, Belgium seems to be everybody's dark horse, but outside of those favorites, I'd have a hard time picking anybody else but one of those four, which is Brazil, Germany, Spain, and France. So I'm going to stick with Germany. I'll just go back to the well on that. And I know they're not seen as being strong as they were 4 years ago, but I'll go with them over Brazil.
Can I say, if we get a Brazil-Germany final, the drama, the revenge, obviously, of the 7-1 defeat that Germany gave Brazil in the semifinals. Also, in that game, Germany would be looking to get their fifth World Cup. Brazil, right now, is the only team to ever win five World Cups. So Brazil kind of trying to hold off, protect their legacy. Germany trying to see if they can go back-to-back. I think the last team that went back-to-back was Brazil as well. So it's almost where you will have Neymar and this newer group of Brazilian players trying to hold off Germany from impeding on the legacy of the Brazilian national team by allowing Germany to kind of get into the same discussion as them. So that type of final, I think, would be great drama. I love this because I feel like there are flaws within all of these top teams. Like Brazil, you can make the argument they rely too much on Neymar. For Germany, they're not as talented as they were last year. They're just not. Spain just fired their head coach. We've seen France and we've seen Belgium and Argentina all just sometimes not be able to finish it in some of the bigger moments, kind of, if you will. It is so exciting. I quite like England's team. I actually think that I expect Marcus Rashford to have some very big moments. That is not to say I think that they're going to win, but I just feel like it's at least nice, right? Because there's no expectations on England this time around. Like normally when that happens, they finish third in the group. With the expectations lowered, like maybe they could win the group.
England has a lot of talented soccer players. My problem in watching them in more recent international tournaments, they don't compete athletically.
Mm.
They just don't. They have a bunch of talented soccer players, but I've seen them get outclassed athletically. And I just don't think they have the pool of, they don't have the overall athleticism it takes to compete with the elite teams. Doesn't mean they're still not a really good team, but you know, athletically, I just don't think they've been there the last few times I've watched them in major international tournaments. I know I would get annihilated if there was a lot of English soccer fans listening, but that's probably not the case at this moment. So anyway, you and I will keep coming back to this every week. Yeah. We'll update and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. I wouldn't call either of us soccer experts. We're just into it, and we thought it deserved a little bit of time today. So let's turn the page mid-segment over to the NFL. There's a bunch of different stories coming out of mini camps, most of which I don't know how much you want to believe and how much you want to go to. What's interesting is this has been a pretty quiet time since the draft for the NFL. Unfortunately, the only stories that have come out of it are kind of negative things like suspensions and that kind of stuff. And one of those is David Irving, defensive lineman for the Cowboys. Just as we're getting news of Randy Gregory looking to reinstate with the Cowboys, he's been suspended multiple times, including most recently for a full season, you have David Irving suspended. He's going to miss the first four games of the year, and he's the seventh Cowboy since 2014 to be suspended to start the season. Some have missed as many as a year, obviously. We're talking Randy Gregory. Some have missed four games, six, and so on. So, unfortunately, this comes on the heels of a big signing for them in Zach Martin, who was a first-round draft pick that everybody would agree, including me, has knocked. That was an absolute home run of a pick. It helped set them up with Zeke Elliott and trying to continue their excellent offensive line play. It slipped a little bit last year, but Zach Martin was not part of that. He signs a 6-year, $84 million extension. So you got all these pieces moving around with the Cowboys, and you know what's Zeke going to look like when he comes back, and can Dak Prescott improve? So going to put this one in your lap and give me your thoughts really on the Cowboys for 2018. Give me some fantasy outlook. Give me outlook as a team, whatever you want to do.
Well, on the David Irving stuff, I don't know if you've seen some of his quotes about the situation. They kind of jump out to you. I'll read you kind of the last one in the piece that was put up on ESPN.com, written by Todd Archer. He says, there's more to life than just football. I'm actually a real person. I have family issues, a lot of issues I've been dealing with. I can't go into much detail. Just know it's behind me. By the time the season starts, I won't be dealing with any of this BS anymore. He also, earlier in the piece, had a quote where he just said, if I could have come, I would have. The real reason's none of the public's business. So Irving seems to kind of be in, or was in, a troubled situation, right? You mentioned the stat, I believe, what, it was seven guys, right, that have been suspended to start the year since 2014, right? That's what you said?
Yep.
Yes, at some point, it becomes the organization. The Mets have all of these injuries, right? And at some point, you kind of have to look internally to figure this out. Now, that is not to say that you cannot be snake bit, right? But you are doing a disservice to say, ah, man, what bad luck. At some point, we have to look at the Cowboys and ask, what are they doing or what are they not doing? Are they letting their players have free will? Is an absolutely terrible way. Are they letting, do they not feel as if perhaps the rules apply to them, or are they not providing them enough help? I mean, those type of quotes from David Irving are, they do kind of take you back, right? To just think about things outside of the sport world for a second, right? Like, he goes home and there are things on his plate. And I guess they've lended themselves to what is an unfortunate situation. But are there not people within the Cowboys organization that could potentially help? I mean, I feel like a lot of these guys feel as if they've kind of had difficulty with these situations. And there has to, at some point, be accountability for the franchise in situations like this. And I know that...
So, a couple of things on that. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but a couple of things on that. I think you're right about maybe the players having a little bit more free reign than they have in other organizations. Look, the Cowboys won 3 Super Bowls in the early 90s, and there wasn't a bunch of choir boys winning those titles. There's a lot of stories that have come out. Books have been written. Crazy stuff went on. And I think, obviously, they don't want it to ever be out of control, but I think they're comfortable having players who aren't choir boys be on the team. Now, they don't want guys getting suspended for drug offenses, or worse. Nobody would want that. But I've always thought it to be problematic in the way that the organization is set up, because the head coach isn't really a disciplinarian. Jerry is the owner and the general manager. And especially with star players, I think it's been assumed by many people that Garrett can't really do much about any of this kind of stuff when there's direct line of communication in some instances between the player and the owner. It cuts Garrett's legs out from underneath him. So when it comes to items like this and having 7 different players suspended in the last 4 years to start the season, that really is on Jerry to just kind of make a decision as to what he wants to do with this kind of stuff. And he can bang his fist on the table and put his foot down and say that we're done with this. And if it happens, we'll make sure you're out of the organization one way or the other. Or he can just keep it going and try to get guys help. And I think if guys are having substance abuse issues, I think the first responsibility is to help them. You can't just get angry and bench the guy and do all that kind of stuff. Excuse me. I personally think NFL teams have gotten better about that kind of stuff and being as sensitive as they can in a league that is seen as being very anti-player and insensitive. So I think those are the 2 factors. They've done this before. They've managed winning teams like this before, although it's been a really long time. That's A. And then B, it's tough to do anything about it when there's really only one guy that's going to do anything about this kind of stuff, and that's Jerry.
I think part of this, though, right, is it is league-wide. For me, I remember I was reading up on different teams' drafts, and I felt like the Browns took a lot of question mark guys. Like Antonio Callaway was probably the biggest name of the bunch that would fit that description, right? And it was somewhat unsettling, because the Browns do not have a culture or people in charge that I trust to handle that situation adequately. I remember when Robert Kimdichie got drafted by the Cardinals, and I think a lot of it was tied to the success that they had with Tyrann Mathieu. But it felt like, okay, that's a good situation. I feel like that works. And I do feel that, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys, like, they are the biggest franchise in, if I'm not mistaken, all of American sports, right? Is it in the entire world? Whatever, it doesn't even matter. They are one of the biggest franchises in the entire universe. They can't continuously have this be something that is a storyline for them. Like, it would just make a lot more sense for us to come on and talk about Dak Prescott and America's team, and are things going to be good in certain spots, as opposed to, why can't they keep players on the field?
Agreed. So that's what I'm saying. There's really only one guy that's going to be able to do anything about it, and that's Jerry. It hasn't happened to this point. He's got to, at some point, just be sick of talking about it. He has to be, but it hasn't gotten there yet. They just haven't gotten there yet. The Randy Gregory thing, he just kind of is all boilerplate type commentary, And now they're excited to talk about Zach Martin, and now they have to talk about the David Irving thing. It hurts the defense to start the season. I don't think anybody is writing home about the Dallas Cowboys defense in the first place, but this is yet another hit to their defense. So
let me
go ahead.
No, I was gonna transition to the Zach Martin thing though, because you did mention that. I wanted to ask you, because I know you do write a lot about the offensive lines as we get closer to the season.
Yeah, I'm doing the big article right now. Yeah,
awesome. I'm excited for it. I think one of the big things that came out of the Martin contract, it's the money, right? It's, I believe, the second biggest contract ever for an offensive lineman, certainly the most ever for a guard. The only person or the only player getting more money than him right now is Nate Solder for the Giants. So I just kind of want to, we can speak about when we get back, just kind of the idea of now paying guards as much or more than tackles.
Yeah, it's a good topic. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about that on FST. It's Mike and Kevin. We'll be back right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Welcome back to FST. Thanks for joining us on Fantasy Sports Radio this morning. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. And the number is 844-843-6879. Call us about whatever you like. One thing before we get back to this sort of NFL offensive line discussion. If you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups and ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Just invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against. Just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So you're talking about offensive linemen, and to your point, Nate Solder has the largest contract, and Zach Martin has the second largest. This is in terms of, I guess, what are we doing? Total guarantees or average guarantee per year? However we're doing. Average per year is what we're basing this on. So Solder in front with 15 and a half a year. Zach Martin, Andrew Norwell previously had the largest contract ever for a guard. He was signed in free agency from the Panthers over to the Jaguars, and Zach Martin jumps over him. You got Russell Okung, tackle, Trent Williams, tackle, Tron Armstead, tackle, Tyron Smith, tackle, David Bakhtiari, Eric Fisher, Cordy Glenn. Riley Reif is in. Kevin Zeitler and Riley Reif are also guards that you see there, like in that top 12 range. So, your point about tackles and guards. So, here's the issue in general. Offensive line play is widely considered to have plummeted over the years, for a variety of reasons. Technique is different at the college level. There's less time to work with players at the college level due to NCAA restrictions, which I'm not suggesting are wrong. And there's less time to work with NFL players because the NFLPA has instituted restrictions in regards to practice time. So you have a lot of players playing in two-point stances at the college level and not having as much time to develop into an NFL player. I think there's a lot of that that goes into it. So offensive line play is considered to be a little nebulous, a little sluggish compared to years past. Additionally, though, Kevin, on the point of tackles versus guards. And so you, my point, that first point is that, so you give the money to the guys that are just kind of good at the job, right? Mm-hmm. So then they jump, people jump on it regardless of position, that you need to make sure you have solid pieces in place there, whether it's a guard or a tackle. But the guard versus tackle thing, I sort of watched this happen too. The left tackle with a right-handed quarterback, which is, you know, most of the league, but the left tackle is important and is always going to be the centerpiece because you need to make sure that quarterback's blind side is protected. But the guards have seen their money rise up because now we are seeing, we have seen some dominant interior players disrupt games. Aaron Donald is a force, obviously, in the middle, but other guys like Ndamukong Suh and play, and teams that know that, I think pass rushers are such a unique commodity that they can maybe force a little bit more pressure from the middle. It doesn't always have to be Aaron, somebody of Aaron Donald's quality. So I think, to some extent, that's why you've seen guard contracts rise up to where Zach Martin and Andrew Norwell are. Like, Zach Martin might be their best offensive lineman. It doesn't matter that he's a guard. Let's just pay him and make sure he stays here so that we have somebody to build around in front of Zeke Elliott. Because Tyron Smith, maybe his best days are behind him. He's had some injuries, that kind of stuff. So I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's kind of my theory on it.
Actually, I think that your first point is something that I had not yet considered. I think it's fantastic, right? Like, if there are only 20 guys in the that are above average at offensive line, you'd be a fool to not pay them. I think that that's a fantastic. Yeah. I do think that the NFL.
Yeah, like the Panthers are going to be bummed that they don't have Norwell. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you don't have the money. What are you going to do? You needed to move other things around in order to make that happen. Maybe they don't consider him to be that much of a value. I think the Giants are looking at a really short window here with Nate Solder. You know, towards the end of his career. I think they could get a couple of good years out of him, but the Pats were not going to pay him that kind of money. They just weren't going to do it.
No. But I also think one of the things the NFL is doing, I feel like they are getting away from older narratives that at this point are probably less fact-based, right? Like, we did it a lot with the slot wide receiver. There was like this niche thing, and now Jarvis Landry is one of the highest paid wide receivers in all of football. And not only that, Julio Jones plays in the slot all the time. Odell Beckham plays in the slot all the time. These guys move around. So that's one of the things. I also think, right, is this idea that all that matters is the left tackle. Like, the right tackle probably faces better edge rushers at this point now. I know that Miller is. That's where J.J. Watt is a lot of the time. The left tackle is still the blind side, but it is not to say now. They're both important, and we're also now seeing, because, as you mentioned again, guys like Aaron Donald and just different blitzes and all of these different nuances where it all matters. It's all relevant. So if I've got Zach Martin, who's one of the five best offensive linemen in all of football, I'd be crazy not to pay him just because he plays guard.
Yeah. Let me put it to you in these terms, because I do think you're right. They're just going to line guys up where they can get after the guy. You know, they're not going to line up Von Miller against a left tackle all day, especially if it's one of the quality left tackles, to have him just frustrated the whole day. And pressure is extremely important. But because quarterbacks get rid of the ball so quickly now, and using a variety of weapons that you just mentioned, Beckham in the slot, who can take it and go for a touchdown, or, you know, Tom Brady is releasing the ball so quickly, Von Miller on his best day can't get there before he throws it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, releasing it in 2 seconds, it doesn't, he's not Shazam. He's a really good football player. But here's the pass rushers. I'm just looking at this contract page, but tell me which of these guys you think is an absolutely locked down elite football player. Von Miller, Ziggy Ansah, DeMarcus Lawrence, Olivier Vernon, Justin Houston, Chandler Jones, Melvin Ingram, JPP, Calais Campbell, Everson Griffin, Robert Quinn, Clay Matthews, Nick Perry, Ryan Kerrigan, Cameron Jordan, Michael Bennett, Cameron Wake. That's probably, I've rattled off 15 names or
four.
So.
Four. I just.
Which ones?
Vaughn, Calais. I number them off as you name.
Chandler
Everson,
Jones.
Everson Griffin and Chandler Jones.
Right.
You named like 20 guys. So, yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. I did it really fast.
No, but I think it's to your point.
So, like, is your investment going to go there, or do you just look for, like, what if the Rams, when Aaron Donald was on the board, were just desperate for the pass rusher?
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just pick the better football player. We'll figure out a way to create pressure in the middle. Now, he's so good that he disrupts things in a really unique manner. I'm not suggesting there's tons of defensive tackles out there like that, but you do see a lot of defensive tackles drafted in the first round of the draft, right? And then sometimes we wince when the Saints trade up and they draft Marcus Davenport because they're going to make him into the next Von Miller. Like, okay.
Yeah, you better.
Good luck. You're right. Good luck with that. And like, yeah, maybe Myles Garrett is the next guy, but I don't know that he's going to be that good. Like good returns in his rookie season. You know, by the way, a couple guys further down the list that people would probably yell at me about, like Jadeveon Clowney is a little further down. He hasn't gotten his second contract yet. Like that's the danger of looking at it on a contract page. And, you know, Terrell Suggs used to be, and Julius Peppers used to be, and Khalil Mack is the one guy I probably is an egregious miss as I'm reading through these. But your boy Derek Barnett from the Eagles has a lot of potential, obviously, too. But we're talking about guys that are already elite players. Let's open it up to maybe five or six, you know, like that isn't that many. And that's taken years of 32 NFL teams of missing on guys to do that, right? They're not all the same age. Von Miller is a certain age and Khalil Mack is another age. And you know what I'm saying? It's taken years of talent scouting to come up with five or six guys in the whole league across 32 teams to produce those levels of talent. Elite talent. So I think that's part of it. It's all one big discussion, but you know, I think you're just trying to build the best offensive line possible. And when play is, like I said earlier, considered to be not as good as it used to be, I think you're just locking up the guys that you have. And it doesn't mean that guards are more valuable than tackles or tackles are more valuable than guards. I think you're just trying to build the best line in front of it. The Cowboys had a couple of years ago when they were at the height of their powers, they had a really unique situation where they were like, they hit on three first-round picks, and they had another guy in Ronald Leary who ended up going to the Broncos, but he was having a good season. So it put them in a really good position. That's why they won 13 games, and Zeke went crazy, and it still amounted to a first-round playoff loss, but I digress. So that's my thoughts on that whole situation. We probably burned an entire segment talking about it, but I think it's interesting to talk about, and it is something that I look at as closely as I can. I'll let you know when the article is finished so everybody can go out there and read it and find it in our exclusive Edge draft package for football, which is either just released or on its way to being released very shortly. So
I have
what else do we have?
Well, I have some more questions just from some best ball.
Go ahead.
One guy I've now actually kind of grabbed my last pick is John Ross. I decided because of the comments from Josh Gordon saying that they had the best receiving corps in the league. I took it upon myself to rank the receiving corps by division. It was a somewhat meaningless task, really, but it kind of just had me looking at.
I can appreciate that you're doing it though.
yeah, but I started to look at the Bengals and I was like, man, it's AJ Green and nobody else. And then I saw his name. I was like, oh my God, this guy went ninth last year. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to think there. Like, the injury concerns are huge. Lord knows if the Bengals even would really know how to use him. But I mean, thoughts on John Ross? Like, I don't know. What do you think?
So I was not a fan of the pick at the time. I don't remain a fan of the pick now, but I think he goes to the point that we talk about at times of you got to keep last year's rankings in front of you. Right now, according to Fantasy Pros PPR leagues, he's the 87th ranked wide receiver. So that's undraftable in most leagues. Talk 12 teams. say everybody picked off six wide receivers, which would be probably higher than average, but that's 72. So he finds himself out of that. You know, the cutoff, if I'm going straight by these rankings, I'll tell you exactly who's there right now, is Mike Wallace is the 72nd wide receiver ranked. Jordan Matthews, Brandon Marshall right behind him. You have other guys like Quincy Enunwa, which is actually kind of interesting that Enunwa is that low. Geronimo Allison, Trent Taylor, Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley, Terrell Pryor, Keelan Cole, Jeremy Maclin, who's a free agent currently, Tavon Austin, John Brown, Cortland Sutton, Ryan Grant, John Ross. A lot of names in there, just rattling them off to get you a sense of the types of players you're talking about. So I think in a deeper league, you want to take a flyer on John Ross because people are forgetting about him because of the injury. I sort of like where your head is at on strategy. But I do have major doubts. Hell, I liked Tyler Boyd a couple of years ago, and I stood on the mountaintop to pound for Tyler Boyd because I thought he was going to be legitimate, and he hasn't really done much in 2 years. I didn't like the pick at the time. I didn't think it was what the Bengals needed. It's an injury-prone, smallish wide receiver with obviously elite speed, but is that already robbed from him from multiple knee injuries? He swore up and down that he didn't have knee problems going into the draft, going into the offseason, and he spent an entire year nursing a knee
what
injury.
What happened is he ran fast enough
he did not have
to get an
catch.
Island.
He did not have one catch.
This is what happened. He ran fast enough to get an island. He didn't even wear the appropriate shoes, so he missed out on an island. Right there, should have been undraftable.
Yep.
You can't have
you have a chance to get an island. You got to take a shot, right?
You can't.
But maybe
he
doesn't run as fast if he wears their shoes.
You find out. You just take a shot.
So
I had another Bengals question.
I appreciate the question, but I think you can ease off.
I think that's fair.
Best case, I think you can look at him. In deeper leagues, you can look at him. And I think if you're in Scott Fishbowl, I think that's a guy. We're drafting 22 rounds. We're all going to have 8 to 10 wide receivers. John Ross is on your board there. And I think you just monitor where he's at and take him a round or two in front of where other people are. Thing like that, like we're talking best ball and it's a deeper league, sure, throw John Ross out there. Like there's other names that I just mentioned before that probably don't have as much upside of him because of offense and quarterback.
Yeah, I would say
throw another one at me.
So I was looking at Tyler Eifert because, again, I was looking at this Bengals receiving core. And, I mean, so last week, George and I got really in-depth on tight ends because he's doing, I think, the tight end.
Zach Martin, married to Tyler Eifert's sister, by the way. I've learned that doing research this morning. Yeah.
We tie everything together.
Fun fact.
But so I don't know. I was looking at Tyler Eifert. I ended up having to take him in one of these best balls, and I didn't feel great about it. And I tell you, I mean, him and Jordan Reed, it's very similar. They're both very talented, but I don't know how you trust them even remotely to be on the field.
Yeah, and Eifert had such a spike in red zone targets. That's why people can't quit him, right? You know, I don't know how to quit you, the famous movie line, but that's why people can't quit Tyler Eifert, because when he's out there, he sees an extreme number of targets in the red zone. But you're right, they're in the same camp. And amazingly, Tyler Eifert's injury history might even be more significant than Jordan Reed's, if that's possible. But they're both there. I think, like I've said before, I'm going to fade a chronically injured player more often than not, because you're going to come out on the right side of that. Long term, you fading injured players is a smart move. You faded Jordan Reed last year, other guys that are chronically injured last year. You came out on top. So I think that's the tough part. So we're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit of NBA draft when we come back. And then we'll do MLB as well. So it's Mike and Kevin on FST on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Come back and join us for hour number 3 right after this.